Good evening, everyone. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. Therefore, it must be time for the American Book of the Dead guidebook by E.J. Gold. We are in our 25th week of exploration, and we're just getting started. We're just getting started because it's an enormous journey. And I just, right now we're on the last week of book five, the book five presentation for tonight.
As far as we can
possibly
tell.
That's what it looks like. And I haven't uploaded it yet because we're working on a couple of things, but I printed out the work that the group did on capturing their thoughts.
Field notes.
Hey, Dave, are you recording this, by the way? I didn't hear the recording began.
Yes, it is being recorded.
Okay.
Yeah. He didn't hear it begin.
Okay. Thank you, George. And Benny Bodo, I know you're going to at some point give us some of the bibliography of what you studied that you read from last week, because it's just a good source. Here's what's going to happen. People suddenly in 10 years are going to read through this book, and if the internet still exists and I continue to pay for my website, which is questionable, this particular page will continue to be up, and someone will have stumbled across book five of the ABD guidebook, and they're going to be looking for something on who?
As-Salaam.
And they'll stumble across this, and suddenly they're going to see 20 pages, I think that's where it's going to wind up, of focused attention on this material. And these individuals have put in a great deal of attention on it. Now, for me, transformation occurs through electrical input. And that electrical input from the manner in which we work is the divine attention that we bring to something. All that is required, in my opinion, is that you place your attention on it. And I literally mean that. As if you're placing your hand and just gently touching something, you place your attention and it starts to speak back to you. It's as if it's giving up its secrets to you, and this group has certainly, with picks and shovels and fine equipment, have excavated something quite unique out of this. And so, if nothing else, if you get a chance, it'll be up hopefully by this weekend, you can read what they've put together. And we've been moved by their presentation for the first two parts of it. And I'd like to, at this point, turn it over to Pat, to Clear Light, and she'll get us started on this next phase of it.
Thank you. So tonight's presentation, as David mentioned, will be our last presentation to the larger group of our exploration and the results of those explorations. So we will begin by reading aloud to you book five, the fifth book of the dead, called the Book of As-Salaam.
Number one, I am he whose essence and attributes are free from all imperfection and deficiency. I am capable of action, and my actions are free from any taint of evil or error.
And my being is the perfect, unobstructed, and uncontested state of being and existence. I have none to oppose me, not even an absolute evil.
Three, for me, there can be no opposition, nor is there imperfection of action resulting from reaction. I meet no resistance, find nothing to bind me, encounter no friction. I am without bounds, without limits, perfect in action and complete in myself.
Four, and so this is the instruction for the second day of apparitions caused by the breaking apart of the five primal elements of consciousness.
Five, and if in spite of the direct confrontation so far given, through the power of attachment to things of the world of matter, you responded with anger or fear to the bright blue light, or you have become overwhelmed by the illusions of the transit world, there shall be further tests of your courage and endurance.
And on this day, the element of pure form will appear to you within your guide and as your guide, and it shall shine white and luminous, and the body of the guide shall become as if lighted from within with a blue, dazzling light.
Seven, and a radiant beam of brilliant white light shall come from the heart of the guide, and the light shall blind you, and it shall strike you in your own heart. And with that white light which dissolves anger and hatred, there shall be also a soft, smoky gray light coming from the world of hell.
Eight, and if you become angry or afraid, you will want to hide from the brilliant white light, and it will anger you with its brilliance, and it will expose you in your fear and anger.
Nine, and you will wish to seek refuge in the soft, smoky light of the hell world. Now you must have faith in the bright white light, which is the light of salvation for you.
It is the grace of the Lord in loving wisdom that the light bathes you in its cleansing rays, and he that bathes in it and rejoices in it is perfected of his existence, and he is made free of sin, and he shall enter into the kingdom.
11. And beware of the dull, smoky light from the world of hell. And if it catches you and pulls you down, you are destined to be born in the world of hell. And you shall endure unbearable tortures and suffering. And for he who is drawn down, there may be no escape. And if you now become angered or fearful, you will be drawn down, and you will not be free in the world of hell, nor is there salvation in the world of hell.
12. And you ought now to concentrate upon the brilliant white light, and thus you ought now to pray with me.
13. Alas, when wandering in the world through the power of violent anger and fear, on the path of radiance of the mirror of wisdom and light, may I be led by the guide of the transit world.
14. And may the Divine Lord be my protector, and may I be safely brought across the danger of the world of transit. Now, may I be placed in the state of the pure, shining void.
15. And he that prays in this way, with humility and faith in the divine love, he shall merge in rainbow light with the heart of reality and attain complete union with the absolute truth.
This completes this reading of the fifth book of the dead, called the Book of As-Salam. Now, our group has had a variety of attendance and travel and electricity and all kinds of issues with our gatherings and therefore our collective searchings and the results of those things. So this last time we met, we had a conversation about how could we make it so that we share with the larger group what we ourselves have absorbed from the work we've done together. And it comes out like this. We are going to share with you in the form of a fireside chat. Now, if you're too young to have gone to school when it was required that you take civics, or if you have no historical recognition of those words, I will place them in the context for you. During the Second World War, the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, sat in front of a microphone that was broadcast by radio, and he called his talks on the radio fireside chats. And the idea was you and your family would be sitting at home around the radio and listening as if that was the fireside, and you were sharing the warmth and the light and the sound from the radio. So I want you to feel like you are relaxed and sitting around a campfire where we are all sharing the kinds of input that we have, but this is not orchestrated. We did not decide who's going to go first and what they're going to talk about. Tonight is all spontaneous. It is not pre-programmed. In fact, Vinny Bodo didn't even know we were going to do this tonight because he wasn't able to be with us at this little meeting that we had. So, Vinny Bodo, the question we're addressing tonight is, what is important to you in Book 5? And I would like to go first. I made a chart. This is my way of dealing with things. I like to sketch them or do points or, you know, I have to organize it somehow so my brain has a way to take it in, because this text is magnificently loaded like a minefield. You know, it's got all these layers of elements and wealth and depth, and you know, you can kind of get lost in there. So I wrote down 5 parts: truth, aspects, elements, process, procedure. Under the truth, I wrote hell world, brilliant white light, brilliant blue light, smoky gray light. Under the aspects, I wrote fear and anger. And somebody said there was an antidote to those things. I wrote down antidote to fear and anger, but I didn't write down what it was. But I know there was one.
Oh, I can. That
oh,
was one.
Good.
Well, that came out of our meeting on Wednesday when we read it. And it was in verse 15, and he that prays in this way with humility and faith. And it suddenly hit me that those are the antidotes to anger and fear.
Yes.
Could you repeat that, Auntie?
That the antidotes to anger and fear are humility and faith. When you are angry, you take a defensive posture. Well, in humility, there's a kind of surrender and openness. And I'm going to be talking more about that because I had some practical experience with this week. And the antidote in terms of fear is faith, that ability that things are going, well, in my background, it was all things work for the good for those who love the Lord. That idea of there is a way through.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My third little box says elements. And the elements for me were not like the five basic elements of consciousness. They were more, what is the format? And there was a hymn that Benny Bodo shared with us a couple of weeks ago, and there was an experience that Laura 34 shared with us about being in her car and being on the freeway, and that visitation of an angelic guide, and the effect of those earthly manifestations as being the elements made manifest is kind of how I think about it. So the process I consider to be prayer, and the last thing I'm going to say about this is my favorite verse in book 5 is verse 5. And I had two discoveries in this process that had sort of knocked my reality in an unusual way. One of them was that the word confrontations, you may not think so, but confrontation comes up in the Book of the Dead all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly showing up. So I look to see what are the meanings that we have currently for the word confrontations. And of course, well, I can't find that right now, but it's up there on the website. Not coming up with it at the moment, but it's up there. Oh, here we go. Nope, not here now. Anyway, the second thing that was different to me, oh yeah, it's the hymn to Avalokiteshvara, part one, which Benny Bodo shared with us, which I just find it astonishing. Definition of confrontation, noun, confrontation, a hostile or argumentative meeting or situation between opposing parties, a confrontation with the legislature, synonyms, conflict, clash, fight, battle, encounter, face-off, engagement, skirmish. Noun, an act of confronting, the state of being confronted, a meeting of persons face-to-face, an open conflict of opposing ideas or forces, a bringing together of ideas, themes, etc. for comparison. That's number 5. Psychology, a technique used in group therapy as in encounter groups in which one is forced to recognize one's shortcomings and their possible consequences. I guess that's where I went, was the confrontation is not in an aggressive manner, it's in an internal manner. And if you don't do the confrontation, you will not proceed, because you will still be maintaining the stance that you had previously. And I'm going to stop for now. I said my piece about book 5.
Well, I feel like you just, that was a perfect introduction for what I was going to talk about. Just in case, David sometimes wonders whether people read the email that he sends out, but I do, because I'm impressed that every week, you know, he makes this effort. And I noticed on this week's that he mentioned that we wanted to explore I am capable of action. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I don't really remember that coming up in our, you know, discussions. And so it sort of was on my mind. And Monday morning I made a call, and I was in kind of a relaxed state. I mean, when I had last seen a person, it had been a very positive experience. And suddenly I had a tremendous confrontation that happened. And immediately there was first a feeling that I was unjustly being attacked, so there was anger, but then there was also, you know, sort of an implied threat, so then there was fear. So all of a sudden I'm in the middle of threats, you know, so fear and anger are definitely there. And you know, there was kind of an agreed upon that, you know, we would revisit this and in a few days. So I thought, well, okay, this is definitely the theme here in this book. Let me go and really work, you know, work with this book. And I had, you know, talked about loving wisdom last week, and then had experienced the sense of, okay, well, what's the antidote? If I'm feeling anger and fear, it's, okay, humility and faith. And how does that tie in with being capable of action? Because I felt sort of frozen, as Pat was saying. You know, if it's internal, you can't move forward, you know. And so I went ahead, and I know Pat said this was spontaneous, but I felt like I needed to write this down.
Spontaneously wrote it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to spontaneously deliver it, but because it's sort of new to me, I felt like I really put it kind of down in words. I had spent a summer looking at Naropa, and I remember one talk that Trillium Rinpoche, they gave us, that we tended to have two approaches to situations and to people. It was either the shotgun or the waterbed. And, you know, it really kind of, stuck out in my mind. And he then went on in the discussion, and again, this is sort of my translation, but that for Bodhisattva, You can go to a place where you accept a situation, and it transcends that shotgun or what it is, a good or bad, right or wrong, yes or no. And when in this book it talks about being capable of action, I start to understand it's not an ego-driven action. You know, it goes on to say, I meet no resistance, find nothing to bind me, and encounter no friction. So if we are pursuing this path as bodhisattvas, there must be an intuitive way of living and relating with situations. And I think that comes about by seeing them as they are rather than how we are. You work with the situation as it happens. And so when I had to go into the situation today, all I knew, I had to keep an open heart and be humble and just listen, not, you know, put forward my point of view, not resist, just to be myself in that situation, but be myself sort of in an intelligent way, to be present to it. And not forcing things, not resisting things, just, or regretting things that happened or didn't happen. You know, the situation is there and you're in it, and it's kind of like we're in chemistry where you allow the elements, like being a catalyst, where you're not separate, you're in that mix, and things are going to form and transform, and so it's not trying to do something. And so, you know, the words really came back, needing no resistance, finding nothing to bind me, encountering no friction, that total openness, as much as I was possible, allow that confrontation to become an experience of loving wisdom. And that's what I had to say on that.
Whoa.
So the stuff works.
Yeah. Yeah, we have cheering and applause in the background there.
Yeah.
You may not see it because the camera's not pointing that direction, but it's loudly cheering and applauding there. I have to say that every time I hear that we can take this text and apply it personally, I just leap for joy. It just is so, you know, it's so meaty and so chewy and so nutritious. And any time that we can do the absorption and, you know, and take it in and assimilate it, that's just the best. Anyway, I said I was done.
Well, you know, I think it's one of the other observations that you were saying, it's a guidebook. And so there was... So here was a situation that I didn't immediately know how to do, but that willingness to say, okay, you know, it's a guidebook. Let's try to work with the guidelines. Anyway.
The ladies are going to pause, gentlemen.
Yes.
You know, we're throwing the ball to your side of the fireplace.
Well, I'll be happy to catch it on the first bounce. I just, you know, I would like to preface my remarks first by commenting that working in this group and other groups that we have been assigned over the years, that I've noticed that ideas arise transorganically. I don't know how else to say that, but I'm sure you understand exactly what I mean when you can't remember who specifically said what or where it came from. But I know that we somehow arrived at it. And so I think that we have reached kind of some common ground here. Tamara was talking about David's comment on being capable of action. And I had just jotted down on a 3x5 card here about an hour ago, that I am capable of action. I have none to oppose me. I am complete in myself. That's within the first, third of the text, and in three places. These were all identity level statements. People are talking, or the author is, talking about who we are as individuals, and that life is richer when our sense of identity is rooted in reality. That is, as long as we maintain our locus of our identity in the luminosity, in the clear light, then we can actually live life to a much fuller degree than would otherwise be possible. We talked about other recurrent themes in the text, but I think that's one that segues very nicely into Tamara's comments about anger and fear. As a therapist, I remember maybe 15 years ago discovering to my astonishment that anger always is a secondary emotion. It always is preceded by something like fear, something that's a feeling of great loss or incapacity. We just don't feel angry at random. So anger and fear are replaced by humility and faith. That's what actually Andy Matter told us at our last meeting here yesterday. So you can expand upon that, or at least I think you can, by saying that attachment, just in general, is swallowed up when we realize that our anger and our fear are themselves derivatives from a common state that is all of our attachments. So because I have diminished faith in divine love, I have fear. And because I have fear, I have anger. So they all derive from the same source. And since anger is generated by fear, I believe that both are replaced then by the love of the divine, which is exactly what this entire text is about. So all of this happens, I think, in this world that we live in, the world of making, what Kabbalists call the world of Asiya, the world of making. And that compassion is needed here, because here is where things are made flesh, where the word is made flesh, because here there is suffering. That's what I think this chapter is about.
That was beautiful, Harry. And the only thing that I'm going to sort of add to that was there was this line about that the illusions of the transit world, there shall be further test of your courage and endurance. And that has been kind of a question mark for me. But then in looking at this bodhisattva path, there does have to be courage and endurance. Because the confrontation, like Patricia said, I mean, the ADD is filled with confrontations. Life is filled with confrontations. So again, you see that relationship between courage and endurance and humility and faith. It's all part of the path.
I'm going to open my mouth again here because you left me at that precise point again as we sat around the other day and we talked and we just shared things like we are now. And when Piangio said that compassion is needed in this world because it is where things are made flesh, I could not grasp that. I mean, it was a completely new idea for me because I had always thought, I'm still having trouble with taking that idea in the way that I'm trying to understand it now. I had always thought of compassion as being what you would call a divine quality, one that doesn't originate here, that you draw divine qualities down, so to speak, from some other place. That if you were a compassionate being, it was because you were in tune with this other divineness. And what I understood from this sentence, compassion is needed here because things are made flesh, so there is suffering. So, you know, my bookkeeper mind, compassion is needed equals compassion equals need. And I'm thinking, it's that necessity quality. It's because compassion could not arise somewhere else because it's not needed there.
There you go.
Duh. You know, so compassion is quality. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, that's where we have all things mixed here in the kingdom. I mean, if it's going to be heaven on earth, it's because these qualities are down here where we need them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and compassion, I think, really kind of comes about because you have suffered. You know, the
very good point.
You know,
my cousin Judy always pointed out that only if you've suffered can you recognize it and empathize with someone else. So you tend to only empathize with people who are hurting in ways that you yourself have been hurt.
Yes.
Well, it's also that compassion can be kind of an expansion of a loving kindness practice, which it doesn't have to feel quite so overwhelming. And you can just take a very simple practice of a loving kindness, you know, working with that every day, just trying to, as Tamara was talking about it, and just try to then realize, oh, okay, this is compassion, and I don't have to feel overwhelmed that I'm taking something on with this. I'm just developing a loving kindness practice. So I think that that's kind of a nice way to look at starting with it, too. And I just came up with that through some of the books that I've been reading for this presentation. And I'll just take 1 minute. I pulled out all these books that I've had, and I picked up a couple others, and they've been sitting on my desk here, and it's been like a vacation. In a way, it's been kind of amazing. These books have been sitting here, and just I pick them up and I just go through them for a couple minutes in the day, and this exploration with the group has really opened up a whole a whole wonderful a way of assembling a bunch of teachings. And I think that one thing that happened with me was that I realized in reading these, mostly are Tibetan based, Tibetan Buddhist based, and I realized how strongly the book five teachings are such a strong part of the lineage. There is absolutely no variation from the lineage of these great teachings, which have gone back thousands of years. But the Book of Five puts these teachings in such a beautiful, elegant, and well summarized form. But it just allows you to open the door and go in as a mind to open up and research and find things that work perfectly with it. So one thing that I was getting back to the things that really struck me about this book is, one is how strongly a part of the lineage is, and number two is that how many of these guides we have out here that are doing this work, the Tibetan Lamas and the Tulkus, and they're putting out books which are all just right in line with this lineage, and it's so wonderful to come in touch with. And in terms of really practical things, is the one thing that really came about through study of this chapter was the absolute certainty that the luminous nature is our ground nature. That is our ground nature. That is,
amen.
That's exactly it. All the books go to that the luminosity is the, you know, you can study the Bardos, you can study whatever way you want to study this, but they all come back to that statement. And that's just been so strengthened by working with the group on this book, and I'm just so thankful for that and for the work on this. So thanks, everybody.
Well, thank you for that. That's an excellent comment. I mean, by noticing all of these things in everyone else around us and then doing this loving kindness practice, we actually are learning how to detect the clear light everywhere we go, in small places, in little things, in little events that before we had overlooked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd say. Go ahead.
Well, you know, earlier tonight, Patricia mentioned prayer, and last time we got together on the topic of prayer and the Om Mani Padme Hum came up, and I just wanted to kind of touch back on that. And I'm hoping, you know, Harry and Grant and Patricia and others can jump in on this, but I know for me that when I read the Secret Talks on Voluntary Evolution, there was one or two sentences where E.J. was talking, and he talked about becoming an organic prayer wheel. And for some reason, that just really captured me as a work that I wanted this as a work wish. You know, began sort of working with the Om Mani Padme Hum, and then later got more guidance about it with Drew. And then this weekend, UK did some wonderful teachings on transmission, and I really encourage people to take time and watch that. And one of the practices that he discussed was about learning to feed your higher body, and through one of the forms of transmission is through food and drink. And the practice, which is encountered in other places, is one when you're at the table to eat with high attention. The second thing is to be grateful to the food, to remember that these plants and animals have harvest light. And essentially, I guess this is what triggered me, Grant, was we were talking about light, that light is our nature, that we are sort of harvesters of light and processors of light. So to be grateful to those beings that assist you with that. And then third, to, while you're eating, work with the mantra of Om Mani Padme Hum. And it just seemed to me such a beautiful practice. And I wondered if, first, Grant, if you would share a little more about what you meant by the practice of loving kindness, doing that exercise, and then Harry, if you would talk about what you had shared about your use of the Om Mani Padme Hum.
Well, just with the loving kindness is also does involve the mantra but it also involves, it can involve realizing that, you know, that you can get some help with this, so that if you are working with loving kindness, then you can work with trying to visualize a teacher or a deity or something that is along with you, trying to practice, assisting your practice of this loving kindness. And so, again, the Tibetans use the word supplicate a lot, and I really need to check out that word a lot more. But, you know, they just say that it almost seems like you're asking for just a little help, you know, like just a little boost here. And
I can ask along this week.
Yeah. So that's where I would say that devotion and keeping that the humility which you had spoken about in terms of just realizing that, you know, I can get a little help with this, and certainly in remembering to do it, also I can, because you know, that's probably also a part that we need a little help with, just remembering the practices we're going about our day-to-day business. So.
Thank you so much.
Well, I will add one comment about the Mani Mantra. I tend to place, as an individual, a lot of emphasis on practice and ideas and making sure they're all congruent and consistent. But experience trumps that in every case. And about probably 8 or 9 years ago, when I was wrestling with whether or not I was going to continue with this work and in what way, I was awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning with something rumbling in my head that was not unpleasant, but I couldn't really decipher what it was. So I got up and went and got on the computer and did every search I could possibly think of, including some I had never thought of before, to try to find out what this was. And I discovered it was this Mani Mantra, and I studied everything that I could read before the sun came up, and this thing persisted. And it would go away when I would have other things to do in life. It would diminish, and then it would come back in a way that was never bothersome, but it became like a constant companion. It was like 100 months we're doing this. So I was just stunned by this. And then after 30 days, it suddenly stopped. And I was in shock for a day or so. I could get it back, but it would never stay on its own like it had. So I've done a lot of study since then, as you well might imagine, on this, that there's nothing, absolutely nothing comes close to the experience of being given a gift. And I have no idea by whom or what, but I'm certainly grateful, and I have remained so. So the Mani Mantra has a special place in my heart because it was a gift to me. So it's, I don't know, the books are probably nice also.
Beautiful.
I wanted to respond to some of these this fireside chat. Share.
Yes, please.
And in listening to everybody, I'm starting to get a little bit of a feeling for what's stuck in my throat as I've read this book now several times in the last couple of weeks. This concept, I am capable of action. And it just, what is that? And now I think, now I know that I have a bit of an angle on it. Because in listening to Tamara, when she was struggling with whatever it is she was struggling with, this confrontation, and then her, I think if I remember correctly, there was a reaction of anger and fear.
Right.
And then she knew she was going to do it again. Now, this is where manifestation of the work actually occurs. She worked with faith and humility. She actually worked with it at that moment.
Moments.
those moments, that's what I mean, during that period of time, those moments, that was an actual manifestation of I am capable of action. It wasn't it, the pre-programmed machine that was reacting, but I am capable of action. She was able to draw on the force that was there for her, and the work proceeds in that manner, with those kinds of small steps. And then I also wanted to say the same thing with regard to compassion that Pat was talking about. It's an organic, actual thing that we are doing. These individuals were exercising compassion. It wasn't like this giant angel came down and that angel's compassion. No, they were practicing it in the manifestation of actual life. And then finally, when this idea of trans-organic process.
Great term.
And to me, it's like these individuals surrendered their historical personalities for a moment and placed their attention on this chapter. It's like the that scene in the Lord of the Rings when they're trying to get into the caves of Moria and they can't figure out how to open the gate.
Mm-hmm.
How do we open the gate? And they try difficult things and complex things, and it was just stay friend. Mm-hmm. And these individuals spoke friend. They allowed themselves to be part of that, and therefore the work was manifest during that period of time. That is true magic. There's nothing more than that. There's not another mystery out there. And we do it in as large a portion as we can do from time to time. But when you do it and you weave together like these individuals did, it's there. And they have taken us one step closer. I am advanced because of the work that these individuals have done and shared with us in the last 3 weeks. So for my part, I'd just say thank you.
And I really encourage anyone who has not had a chance yet to participate in a group to It is such a blessing to participate in these group meetings, and so because we were all transformed and we all became, what is it, trans-organic?
Trans-organic process.
Yes, it was a
I don't know. I just made that up on the spur of the moment.
You know, when we went back and looked at the notes, like, okay, well, who said that? You know, that there was no longer that personal identity.
Yeah.
There was a group functioning, and trust me, it's been that way in each of the groups, so please do yourself a big work favor and get connected.
Yes, try the experience.
Yes, try.
I want to share.
Open to the experience.
Marvet, did you have a question?
Well, no, I had a comment.
Well, we don't know if the phone's going to work.
Try.
It won't work.
Of a universal cosmic federation.
Amen to
that.
So it's about developing our skills at telepathy, which we can do.
Well, conditions are augmented when you work as a group for telepathy to develop basically on its own.
Yeah.
Why? Because the necessity of the group create the possibility of higher capacities, whereas working as individuals never does. So that's one of the options, is the necessity will allow development. And this is the thing with all of this, is we put ourselves under the obligation of the scouting group of looking at this text and delving and pondering and sitting with, and then hopefully applying, which you've heard examples of tonight. And then what we find when we share this is it even spirals even more.
Right.
You know, it works even more.
There's another element of magic that I wanted to point out of your group, and actually I'm directing this to Pat. Sometimes all you can do, the only effort you have, the only ability you have, is to show up. And you show up, and that in itself creates the magic, because you allow yourself to be there. And I can guarantee you that it has created magic tonight for sure. Enough said.
Amen. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for group five. Thank you, everybody that's been able to attend this evening, including our huge studio audience tonight. We're kind of keeping them a little bit quiet, but they're a little crazy. And but we'll look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, when we'll continue.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.